Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, Otherworld, Part 2. Read by Mitchell 2. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere in some time, you might discover an ancient secret world humans are not supposed to know about.
Didn't we agree your cat's a distraction? Hans noted, unsuccessfully hiding his displeasure as he drew the heavy curtains across the room's only window. Morgan didn't like the dated therapist's office. With the shades drawn, the dark wood paneling seemed ready to cave in on her. Reacting to Morgan's unease, Echo hissed and clawed at his crate's nylon mesh.
He's part of this, and I won't continue without him, Morgan asserted defiantly, placing the mustard-green Petco Deluxe travel cab she had bought online the day after her last session. Echo had insisted the first pet carrier a friend had lent her smelt like dog.
Okay, Hans finally sighed, careful to steer a wide berth around Echo's crate. Not ideal, but if you insist, this will just make things take longer. I'll have to inform your insurance company.
Go ahead.
Morgan repositioned Echo's crate so he could observe, then lay back on the worn leather couch and started her deep breathing exercises. Hans scowled disapprovingly at the arrangement. Morgan could smell that a tanning or conditioning agent had been applied to the couch, probably to clean it between clients, she guessed. But she had never seen anyone else in the hall or waiting room, which was odd, considering Hans' long, star-studded client list. She glanced over to Echo for assurance. The cat ignored her and settled down to scrutinize Hans as if the man was a large, vicious dog which might bare its teeth and attack at any second. Echo had reluctantly agreed to say nothing and simply observe. She had made it a condition of him accompanying her.
Your cat's fine, Hans assured impatiently. Now, Morgan, I'd like you to start by relaxing through your breathing. Use your diaphragm. Feel its movement. Take the air in through your nose, down into the bottom of your lungs. Hold it there for a few seconds, then slowly exhale through your mouth. Great, that's it. Concentrate on the air entering and leaving. There's nothing else. Just you and the air,
Hans directed in a calming tone while checking his notes on his tablet until Morgan appeared to be ready. When he thought she was in a receptive state, he began.
You're at a gate.
His voice was slow and soft, encouraging Morgan toward a mild trance.
There are animal heads carved on the top of the gate posts, and a snake and two Egyptian-looking figures nearby. You are there, you are in that moment. What is happening, Morgan? What are you seeing, hearing, feeling?
Morgan took a few more deep breaths, concentrating on the scene Hans had described before she started.
This is too weird. Did I somehow slip and hit my head on a rock hidden under the snow? That's got to be the explanation. I'm hallucinating. I'm actually lying in the snow unconscious, right? But I can feel the rock under my boots and smell the snake's breath. It's asking a question. It wants me to name the animals which guard the gate to the great hall. I think it means the heads on the gateposts. One's a ram and, I almost say a dog, but that doesn't feel right. What would be more appropriate? A jackal. Who said that? Echo heard it too. His ears are twitching, trying to find the source of the voice. I can't find it either, but the snake seems to have accepted the answer and has moved out of our way. The other figures, with tan, triangular, shirtless torsos and large headdresses, beckon us past them. I pick up Echo and we walk through into a hall with three... The only way I can describe them is as levels extending back into the distance. I can't see where they end. We're in an open space at the front, and there are ladders leading to each. The top one appears to hold a lake. The middle has some shrines and a place for a boat. I'm not sure why I know that. There's not one there now. On the bottom, there's a space for ceremonies.
We'll be greeted and evaluated.
It's the same voice that said Jackal. I'm looking for its owner, but there is only an indistinct shadow on the wall. I know it's not mine when it doesn't move with me. I'm spinning around to see where it's coming from, but there is no one there. Echo suddenly digs his claws into my arms, which is hurting so much I drop him. He lands on his feet and warily approaches the shadow. Who are you? I'm quizzing to empty space.
I could ask you the same, it replies without hesitation.
The voice is coming from no specific location. It's all around me and Echo's confused too. His tail is twitching and he is crouching, ready to spring.
Morgan. My name is Morgan. There's no answer.
Echo is yowling in pain.
Stop it! You're hurting him! I'm screaming at the shadow which has Echo captive at its center.
It's okay. The voice is coming from Echo, who has suddenly calmed down. Hans looked up from his tablet.
So, your cat started talking after this incident.
Don't say any more.
Echo hissed from the pet carrier, lunging at its mesh in a futile attempt to halt the session.
Was that you, Morgan? Or are you pretending to be the voice of your cat?
Morgan nodded, hoping Hans would accept her admission, then settled Echo with a disapproving glare, mouthing the words, "Not now."
This is a significant memory, Morgan. What happened to your cat? Please focus. You're in a hall with three levels. Echo is on the ground. You said he was trapped or something similar, then informed you in English that he was fine?
Morgan rolled onto her back again, and, after a few minutes, closed her eyes and sighed.
I don't understand what is happening. The air is heavy and full. I feel it move by me to focus on Echo. Echo is on his back, clawing frantically at nothing. I'm trying to get between the thing in the air and Echo. Ah! Echo scratched me. I'm jumping back, staunching the blood with my other hand. It's gotten to Echo. He's stopped moving. I think he's dead, but he's getting up now. Staring at me, examining his paws like he's never seen them before. Echo? Are you all right? I'm trying to pick him up, but he's backing away.
It's okay, he purrs. But we are not safe.
Echo's talking. How can that be? But the sound is coming from him.
I'm not your cat. I just share his body.
The voice is calming. I don't believe you. You're throwing your voice or something. This is just a trick. Stop hiding. I'm yelling in frustration. I look around, but the hall is empty. The thing claiming to be an echo is speaking again.
Those without form cannot go on. And I've been here so long, an eternity in fact, stuck between the first and second gates, trapped by my forced insubstantiality. So, I need a host to pass through the gates, and I thank your feline friend for his understanding. His form is the perfect, ironic disguise.
Echo has turned away from me and is walking toward the three balconies. But our path is blocked by two figures. One is a man with a dog's head, and the other a woman holding a staff in one hand with an unusual tall headdress. It's a column with what might be a bowl, where the capital would be.
That is Anubis and Nephthys.
The voice in Echo is explaining.
They know me, or at least once did, before I was exiled here. How sweet. I'm right under their noses, and they don't recognize me. They'll let us through on the lowest level, because you're not bound by the agreement.
What agreement? I don't know what you mean. Echo is giving me an incredulous stare, like I'm too dumb to bother explaining.
We must pass through the gates.
He's telling me, nodding toward the figures blocking our way.
I'll help you navigate the passages of the other world. It's the only way, Morgan. There is no going back.
The woman with the weird headdress is nodding to Doghead. Echo has jumped into my arms, and we're suddenly at the entrance to a long, narrow corridor. The walls are an iron grid, with spikes protruding from it. The footing is slippery, so it's easy to lose my balance and impale myself on one of those sharp metal stakes. I'm getting the impression from whatever Echo has become, this is a special passage for people like me. He is prodding at me to enter, but there are fire-breathing serpents behind the metal grid. Their flaming breath reaches right across the passage, and there's no way through without being burnt alive. I'm refusing to move. That's it. I don't want to go on.
Hans had stopped taking notes. He was watching Echo's reactions instead of Morgan's, and only turned away when he noticed Morgan stop talking.
That's fine, Morgan. You've done a stellar job today. We'll pick this up next appointment.
I don't trust that man.
Echo complained when Morgan finally released her cat from the carrier.
At least he's trying to help me. You've done nothing other than make me feel like I'm living in a bad dream with a talking cat.
Morgan accused, falling back into her favorite chair.
I got us out, didn't I?
And Echo? What about Echo?
Your cat is still here, and much more understanding than you.
Did Echo really know what he was agreeing to?
Yes. Well, mostly. He knows instinctively.
Morgan stiffened and sat up.
Really? Then tell me, what he agreed to and for how long?
It's not that simple, Morgan. You and your cat would have been trapped. You would have become servants.
I still think I'm talking to myself and you don't exist. Maybe I did fall off a river cruise and bang my head. Or I'm still lying in the park freezing. I don't remember, and you refuse to tell me anything. Is what I told Dr. Milstrom true? Is that how we met?
You really shouldn't go back there, Morgan. You don't know enough. But if you remember more...
Echo jumped on Morgan's lap and began kneading her legs.
Hey, that hurts.
But before she could extract the cat, he settled down and curled up.
Just be careful of that man. He is not what he appears to be.
Echo purred.
My name is Bast. That's all you need to know.
The cat nuzzled into her arm, then appeared to go to sleep.
Really? You're going to sleep after admitting who you are? Okay then, I'm not taking you to the next session.
Echo suddenly began to spasm. Morgan grabbed at her head as intense pain knifed through her mind. Dr. Milstrom's building felt even creepier without Echo, but Morgan needed to get away from her talking cat. She needed to prove to herself that either Echo did share his body with something calling themselves Bast, or everything she had experienced since walking into the darkness on that cold night was the hallucinations of a hypothermic mind slowly dying of exposure in the field near her house. Hans smiled when she entered the therapist's office, minus the pet carrier.
I'm glad to see that you've taken my advice and left that cat at home. We'll make much better progress without it interrupting.
Hans beckoned Morgan over to the therapy couch. The heavy cloth curtains had already been drawn, so the only light came from a pair of incandescent Tiffany lamps on the oak end tables Morgan hadn't noticed before. She stood for a second, suddenly feeling very alone. Hans noted her hesitation.
We need to create a calm and safe space to help you through the next phase, he explained, pulling out his tablet. You're close to getting to the heart of what happened to you, Morgan.
Morgan began to regret leaving Echo at home. Reluctantly, she put down her bag and lay hesitantly back on the couch, feeling anything but safe.
Start with your breathing, Morgan. That's it. Feel the air move through you. Imagine you are the air.
Morgan reluctantly put her misgivings aside and focused on Hans' voice and the physical sensation of air flowing through her lungs. The presence suddenly slipped away, and she found herself back in the darkness.
You're at the start of a long hallway lined with fire-breathing serpents. You can feel their toxic heat licking hungrily at your skin,
Hans read from his notes suggestively.
You are there now. It is real. It is not a dream. What are you doing?
Echo is encouraging me.
Morgan stopped herself from saying Bast. Hans made a note, but didn't acknowledge Morgan's stumble.
What are you being encouraged to do?
Echo's urging me to step into the flames. He's claiming we won't be hurt. I'm terrified, but I experiment by tentatively reaching out with one arm. I'm surprised. Echo is right. The flames aren't burning my skin. They're not even hot. I walk as fast as I can, and suddenly we're through into the next chamber. We're standing in a large, dark space filled with the sound of a slowly beating heart. There's a woman with wings attached to her arms, made of blue and gold feathers. She has long black hair with a crown of a single tall feather. Beside her is one of those old balance scales with a gold plate on either side to hold things to be weighed.
Ma'at, the judge.
Echo's whispering to me.
She has your heart in her hand. This is the moment of truth.
I'm checking my chest. There's no heartbeat, so I panic.
Calm down, Morgan. You have nothing to hide.
Echo's whispering to me. Ma'at is taking the feather from her crown, placing it on one side of the scale, and putting my heart on the other. Of course, my heart is starting to pull the balance down on its side, and I instinctively understand that is not good. Echo is anxious, needing the arm I'm carrying him in. Ma'at is just staring at me. The balance is slowly oscillating back and forth, as if the feather and my heart are almost the same weight. But that can't be, I begin to protest.
You had nothing to hide, so your heart is light,
Echo explains. Now we're someplace else. What just happened, Echo?
Ma'at would have eaten both of us if your heart had been laden. You were judged innocent of indiscretions against their will, and Ma'at didn't recognize me, so she let us through. However, you're not meant to take the same path as leaders and royalty.
I'm not going any further until you explain what's going on, I'm demanding.
Are you sure? Knowing has a price, Morgan. They'll never leave you alone once you understand.
I'm willing to risk it.
Okay, you've been warned. This place has been around since my people came to an arrangement with your kings and leaders. We always prefer to rule by proxy. It takes fewer resources to have the vanquished enslave and monitor themselves. Following our will, and ensuring those who are subjugated do as well, gets a leader a ticket to the utopia we've built for them. At least as long as they can prove they have followed our directives. That's what these gates and halls are for. Challenges to ensure your elites have earned the reward. No one but rulers are meant to know about this arrangement. A few, like you, are recruited when needed.
Recruited? Recruited to what?
Even Utopia needs servants to clean and maintain it. Someone has to serve its residents.
Echo, or whatever Echo has become, is sort of laughing.
Your leaders, kings, queens, CEOs, politicians, whatever they want to call themselves now, are here to receive their reward, not to work. Recruiting is necessary from time to time to keep the ranks of the servants at an optimal level. But even recruits must pass through a few of the gates, albeit at the lowest level, to ensure they are suitable. You've passed, and that's no surprise, only human stock with potential are brought here. However, I don't entirely agree with the system. That's why my form was taken from me, and I was stranded.
This isn't making a lot of sense, Hans. Morgan stirred and propped herself up on her elbows. Keep going, Morgan. Don't try to rationalize. Just fall back into the moment and let it carry you along. Are you sure? Don't question what you are experiencing. It's the only way to get to the truth, Hans reassured. Just listen to my voice and let your mind go. Morgan sighed, then slid back down and allowed herself to be guided back into her memories or dreams or whatever they were. I'm feeling perturbed and frustrated, she admitted. I'm challenging Echo. What are you? Instead of answering, he's jumping up on a stone pedestal. He's at my eye level, staring directly at me intimidatingly.
I am not a what,
he's hissing.
I am a who. The pharaohs called me Bast, but I'm not their cat god. I am a Sopdet, albeit a disaffected one, who disagrees with what we are doing to your world.
Sopdet? What's that?
If you look down and to the left of Orion at the right time of night, you'll see the brightest star in the sky. That's Sopdet.
Sopdet is a star? That's where you're from? Echo isn't answering my question. He's hopping off the pedestal and walking toward a passage.
We have to get through the final hall. I want out of here as much as you. So, for now, you'll need to trust that I have both our interests in mind.
We enter the passage. It's even worse than the last one. The snake-like serpents have come out of the walls and are crawling and twisting along the floor and hanging from the ceiling. They seem to part for Echo, but not for me. They're rubbing up against my legs, and I can feel the texture of their dry, scaly skin through my winter pants. The ones on the ceiling are trying to drop onto my back.
Ignore them,
Echo is snarling.
Keep close to me.
I'm trying. But the serpents close in behind him so fast it's hard. It's like I'm wading upstream through calf-deep living sludge.
Keep up. We're almost there.
Echo is getting further ahead of me. The serpents are pressing so hard around my legs I can hardly move. One drops onto my back. I scream and trip, and the snakes are everywhere, burying me alive and...
Morgan,
We're through.
Echoes purring in my ear. I open my eyes, and I'm lying on the floor of a torchlit basement, filled with people. They appear too focused on their tasks to care about our sudden appearance.
Come on. We only have a small window before we're noticed.
Echo is warning as he leads me through the crowded space to a small hallway. The cave-like passage hasn't been used for quite some time. There's thick, greasy dust on the floor, and I need to bend over to fit into it. But I can hear someone yelling at us. They are demanding we stop. Echo and I begin to run. I can hear growling behind us and angry claws on the stones as whatever it is closes the distance. It's so hard trying to run bent over, and the tunnel seems to be getting smaller as we go. I can feel the thing nipping at my heels. I can feel its breath on the back of my neck and its spittle as it roars. I stumble on a rock I didn't see, and suddenly I'm being pulled forward away from the thing, and then... We're standing in front of Queen Hatshepsut's temple.
Morgan was shaking as she sat up abruptly.
I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore, Hans.
Hans absentmindedly played with his stylus, considering what he had heard, then put the device down on his desk and leaned forward.
I agree. You're done. You've been able to remember everything.
But it's just a bunch of nonsense, Morgan protested. They're not memories. They're hallucinations or dreams or some type of aberration. It can't be what actually happened.
Hans slowly eased himself out of his chair and circled around Morgan to the office door.
I'd give yourself more credit than that, Morgan. I'm quite sure that's exactly how things occurred. At least from your perspective. Influenced as it was by Bast.
Morgan stared at the therapist in disbelief, waiting for him to laugh and admit he was just joking, that her so-called memories were her brain's way of hiding some deeper trauma she wasn't yet ready to relive. She almost missed the click of the lock on the office door. Then, the far corner of the room appeared to dissolve into nothing, a nothingness she had hoped never to see again.
Your sessions are over.
Hans' smile and voice were suddenly cold.
You've remembered everything. Everything perfectly. Confirming our worst fear. But you have led us to the form Bast has taken to escape into your world.
Morgan abruptly sprung off the couch with the agility of a cat. Hans blocked her way, grabbing her by an arm and started dragging her toward the void.
No, I'm not going back!
Morgan growled and clawed at his face. The therapist dodged with inhumane speed.
Both of you are,
Hans insisted, bending Morgan's arm behind her back until she thought it was about to break. He pushed her closer to the dark hole, which had grown to consume the entire corner of the room.
Both you and your human host are going back, Bast. I knew if I insisted the cat couldn't come, you would jump to Morgan. But you failed to stop her remembering. She knows about us, and therefore must go back. And you don't belong here. You may not agree with how we have manipulated this world into going down a self-destructive path, so it will never achieve its potential and compete with us. But you're exploiting your host for your own ends as well. What's the difference? Tell me, did you give Morgan or her cat a choice?
Morgan suddenly twisted free of Hans' grip. Taking advantage of the man's surprise, she pushed him into the void. The darkness immediately collapsed in around him.
I want you out of my head!
She demanded.
Done.
An indistinct shadow formed on the wall.
You understand too much, Morgan. I warned you that knowledge has a price.
The words floated in the air for a moment before decaying. The shadow faded away, leaving Morgan alone in the rundown office. Today's story, Otherworld, Part 2.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. To listen to other great APN award-winning podcasts, such as Not There Yet, a series of short essays by Terrence C. Gannon, covering a wide range of subjects from the perspective of the second decade of the 21st century, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by Storylines, a podcast from Women in Film and Television Alberta. Storylines highlights some of our province's most successful women in film and television, both behind the camera and in front of it. Host Sheena Rositer is herself a filmmaker, and she has had some deep and instructive conversations with trailblazers and experts in the field. Discover how Michelle Wong, production pro, switched careers from a high school teacher to a successful 25-year career in the film industry. Find Storylines on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at wifta.ca. That's WIFTA.ca. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Inventures Unbound, the ultimate platform for innovators, investors, and industry to share, inspire, and interconnect virtually. Even in these times of distancing, connection and innovation are more important than ever. Inventures Unbound is brought to you by Alberta Innovates to ensure that innovators have opportunities to connect with ideas, investors, and industries from within our borders and reaching far beyond. Join the launch of a virtual community with live stream events June 3rd and 4th. The opening keynote is renowned neuroscientist Tali Sherritt, who will speak on how innovators and investors can harness optimism and vastly improve their decision-making skills. Other topics due for a deep dive will include smarter cities, vibrant communities, healthier living, broader thinking, agriculture in the technology age, and innovation of work. You won't want to miss the all-out live stream pitch battle event. If you have a pass to Inventures 2020, you already have access to all of Unbound's goodies. If you'd like access to just Unbound, there's a pass for that at InventuresCanada.com. InventuresCanada.com. Makeshift Stories recently sponsored edition 51 of the Fiction Podcast Weekly. The newsletter brings you the latest from the world of audio fiction, audio drama, and storytelling. You can find Fiction Podcast Weekly at thepodcasthost.com/fictionpodcastweekly. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. To find out more about David, head over to davidhume.me. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.